we have certain processes, certain mechanics to actually reach the customer, to serve the customer. So whether it is supply chain, whether it is finance, whether it's IT, whether it's manufacturing, we work together. We work together to actually deliver that specific consumer experience or user experience for our end users. So taking stock of what those processes really mean, removing waste from those processes, automating those processes, getting the right digital tools, understanding what that enterprise data means in the context of serving the customer is what it also means to be an intelligent power management company.
Budget overruns, brick devices, data breaches. Building connected products is hard. Welcome to Over the Air. Sharp, unfiltered conversations with executives about their IoT journeys, the mistakes they made, the lessons they learned, and what they wish they'd known when they started. I'm your host, Ryan Prosser. Welcome back to Over the Air, IoT connected devices and the journey. My name is Ryan Prosser, CEO of Veri. And today we're joined by Aravind Yarlagadda, Chief Digital Officer at Eaton, and we're going to be talking about digital transformation in industrials. Aravind, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, Ryan, for having me here. Excited to be here and excited to share my experience.
So Eaton, you guys are a huge company, big name in the space, but tell us a little bit about Eaton, particularly through the lens of what you guys are doing in the industrial world. We'll jump into it from there.
Eaton's a world-class manufacturer of electrical equipment and industrial equipment. I think we are divided into a couple of sectors here. The electrical sector serves utilities, industrial process, like mining, paper and pulp, chemicals, refineries, etc. It serves commercial and residential buildings. It serves data centers. These are the specific industrial segments that we actually serve within the electrical sector. We supply power protection, power distribution equipment, utility equipment, like UPS systems, like breakers, drives, etc., motion control stuff. That is what we do for the electrical sector. On the industrial sector, I think we have two specific businesses, not two specific market segments. The vehicle segment, where I think there is the IC engine or the traditional vehicles, and then there is the electric vehicle. So we supply componentry for the vehicle, the consumer and consumers like passenger cars, commercial vehicles, etc. And we also serve the aerospace segment. We've supplied pumps, valves, hydraulic equipment to aerospace manufacturers and OEM. So that is what Eaton does today. We are in the journey of becoming an intelligent power management company. So what does it really mean? So applying a lot of these digital transformation techniques, where we want to get to is how we allow our consumers, our customers, users to create power, to distribute power, to deliver power through digital means, through digital technologies, and automate the process, whether it's a utilities customer, whether it's a data center's customer, whether it's an industrial process customer. They have needs as well in terms of automating their individual process. So the intelligent here really means, how do we understand we as a vendor, as a partner to our industrial and electrical consumers and users, we need to understand what our data really means from our equipment, whether it's from a breaker, whether it's from a drive, whether it's from a UPS system, equipment used for harsh and hazardous environments, motors, pumps, valves, etc. So what does the data mean in the context of operational performance required for these industrial consumers or users? Taking that specific data and deriving intelligent insights and making sure operational performance and efficiency of our end user process is optimal. That is what it means to be an intelligent power management company. The other side of it is, within Eaton, we have certain processes, certain mechanics to actually reach the customer, to serve the customer. So whether it is supply chain, whether it is finance, whether it's IT, whether it's manufacturing, we work together. We work together to actually deliver that specific consumer experience or user experience for our end users. So taking stock of what those processes really mean, removing waste from those processes, automating those processes, getting the right digital tools, understanding what that enterprise data means in the context of serving the customer is what it also means to be an intelligent power management company. So there's two facets to that, Ryan. One is the external side of serving consumers in their digital transformation journey. And then there is the internal context of what kind of process do we have today that we need to optimize and be more productive to serve our, to reach and serve our customers better. So that is in context in terms of what Eaton was and what the Eaton of tomorrow will be. It will be an intelligent power management company, and we are well on our journey to becoming an intelligent power management company.
So let's zoom in on this a little bit. I know you do a ton of work. You mentioned it with industrials, companies that are on this digital transformation journey. Talking with you previously, I know that you kind of view this as broken down into some key phases. Can you talk a little bit about those phases? And, you know, specifically as folks are out there, they're saying, hey, I work for an industrial company, kind of guiding them to help identify the key attributes that would say, oh, okay, we are very clearly in phase two or so forth. What are some of those phases as you think about it?
It's a really good contextual question, Ryan. I kind of segregate this into three categories. So there's legacy industrials that are very transactional in nature. They manufacture, they produce components, whether it is like a small valve or a small pump or a bearing. They actually produce this in volume, like significant volumes, and either they sell this direct to the end user, an industrial user, or they work through channels, distribution channels, to actually sell this to end users. But legacy industrials, I mean, they, at some point of time, price becomes a challenge for them. Whatever they produce becomes a commodity. So those are legacy industrials that they understand that there is digital technology out there on the horizon. They understand that there are different kind of business models, but they are content with just like producing components and just like shipping those components and delivering them through traditional distribution channels, traditional manufacturing techniques. But they have no idea, they have no visibility into what their inefficiencies in their manufacturing processes are, what kind of new business models, if tweaked and tuned, can produce better results for them, what kind of new offerings in terms of services, data-oriented offerings, data-oriented services, what is it that they can help our customers better with. So those are legacy industrials. The second class of industrials are software industrials. Along with selling these product components, they actually sell software packages for monitoring the equipment or for configuring the equipment, understanding the health of that specific equipment. Now, those software packages in general, as a general rule, I should say, they're sold independently. Some of them are sold independently. There is no connection between what kind of software packages are sold along with this industrial equipment that's getting delivered to end users. In some cases, that software is just given away for free, meaning that there is no additional value of the software except to configure that equipment. And in some cases, it's sold as a separate package for a certain number of licenses, and it's a one-time sale and people forget it. So those are software industrials. They understand software development, they understand the value of software, but they haven't really mined the relationship they have with the customer and added services on top of that software package to have longer term recurring value to the customer and longer term recurring revenue to themselves as a supplier and a vendor. So those are software industrials, if you will. They are slowly trying to understand what digital tools means. They have literacy when it comes to digital tools. And literacy to me means understanding a specific digital tool, like parsing editor, if you will, and an email editor, or a video conferencing tool. Just understanding that is digital literacy. These software industrials don't have digital fluency. Digital fluency is the next level, where I think you understand the methodology in terms of understanding the data, understanding the patterns behind the particular data, and using a mix and match of different digital tools to actually serve the same purpose, but in a much more efficient. So that is digital fluency taken to the next level. So that's a segue into the third kind of industrials that we need to talk about, and they're called digital industrials. There are very few digital industrials that exist out there. As Eaton want to be a digital industrial, we are somewhere in between being a software industrial and a digital industrial, well on our way. As we traverse the journey to becoming an intelligent power management company, I think one of the intent is to become a fully digitalized industrial. What does that really mean? Digital industrials not just understand the value of software, but longer term solutions. They sell solutions. Solutions which mean hardware, software, services, data oriented services. For example, taking or providing analytics dashboards for our end users on a recurring basis based on equipment data, based on process data in a refinery as an example, or in a commercial building, or even for that matter, residential homes that are part of the geographic territory of a utility. Take that specific data, meter data, understand the trends in that specific data, and then have custom specific analytics given to end users, the residential users, as well as the utility to understand what kind of demand patterns there are. In the case of a data center operators really need to understand, look, how much is the power density for the racks in a specific data center? Are these new workloads because of generative AI causing a lot of capacity constraints? Do we need more cooling? Do we need more racks in the data center? What kind of additional memory, what kind of additional storage capacity is actually needed within the data center? So such kind of data mined through specific algorithms, domain-specific algorithms in the context of these industrial segments we serve, like data centers or utilities or industrial process, those domain algorithms plus the data processing algorithms, we provide that business logic, if you will, in the case of like industry suites which serve these segments. And we say that data has context for operational efficiency of a data center. That data has context with the reference of an analytic or a notification performance of specific equipment in a data center. So that is the example of a good digital industrial that actually gives those kind of intelligent insights to our end user. And also intelligent insights back to our factory floor, back to our customer service team in terms of what's the next proactive service that could be done without the customer actually calling us. So those are the three phases, if you will, Ryan, in terms of where an industrial should lie. The third kind of industrial I talked about in case of digital industrials, they've also mastered the art of customer experience through digital tools. That closed loop, if you will, in terms of how do you deliver the right customer experience all the way from when the customer discovers what problem they have, distilling down that specific problem into these are the kind of tools and solutions that they require and they need to buy, and this is how they need to use, and this is how they need to partner with other providers of technology and to complete that loop. And service provisioning, delivery of customer service also needs to be a key for these end users to actually talk to the vendors or the suppliers or partners. So digital experience, having the right front-end tools is absolutely key for being a digital industry.
It seems to me that most industrials are at stage zero looking at how they get to phase one. I mean, I just look at the world, I said, my God, so many of these people feel like they're at phase zero based on, I don't know, I think our shared assessment of what these different phases look like. What's your take on that and why?
I would agree with you, Ryan. I mean, it depends which geographical territory of the world you're in also, right? For example, in Europe, many of these industrials that are manufacturing componentry, right, they've advanced to being level one, but they get stuck at level one because they're trying to get scale. If you look at the continental US and Canada, a lot of these smaller scale, small to mid-scale industrials, right, they're stuck in level zero. And some of the bigger industrials above mid-scale that can actually invest some capital to improve their factory efficiency through digital tools, they are slowly advancing towards level one. So you are right in the sense that most of these industrials are stuck either at level zero or level one or somewhere in between. But if they get past level zero and they understand what real transformation means in the context of their equipment, in the context of their internal process, and the digital transformation journey of their end users too, right, in terms of completing that loop of service, that is when they can quickly progress and unlock value beyond becoming a level one industrial.
So shifting gears a little bit, one thing I know is a shared passion of yours and mine is EVs. And I wanted to ask you, Eaton is one of the biggest power electronics companies in the world. I know that utilities falls under your purview massively. We're hearing today, we're recording this episode kind of halfway through 2023, and the news cycle would have you believe there's this coming apocalypse. The utilities are not going to be able to provide electricity to this fleet, and it's just going to get worse. This is not a good deal. I guess my question for you is twofold. One, do you see some kind of infrastructure apocalypse approaching? And two, what can be done to provide the infrastructure? I'm reminded of a time less than 100 years ago where there were not gas stations. We didn't have gas station infrastructure. This was a giant problem. And the free market did its thing. It did what the free market does. And now, I would argue there's probably too many gas stations now. What's your take on, like, is this a real story and how do we prepare for or solve this issue? And I guess through the lens of power electronics, of course. This is your area and I'm curious to hear your take.
I mean, Eaton, I mean, a traditional power management company, right? I mean, getting towards being an intelligent power management company. We hear this from our customers, from our utilities customers, from our residential commercial customers all the time, Brian. So your question primarily was, as an intelligent power management company, what is our take on this, right? Has the infrastructure apocalypse arrived? I mean, is it imminent? My view, my take on this, Ryan, is I think it's already there, but it depends on what kind of infrastructure. So I share the same passion as you. I mean, all my vehicle portfolio is completely 100% electric. So I have 3 EVs today. First thing, initially it was the scarcity of EVs, right? I mean, trying to get an electric vehicle. We've kind of surpassed that. Now I think there is a glut of EVs in the market. Second, I think the EV charging infrastructure, other than Tesla, of course, right? I mean, Tesla has a really good DC supercharging network. I mean, they have good infrastructure support and you'll not wait too much time or you'll not find a broken Tesla charger or supercharger. But you look at other non-Tesla EVs and the equipment they have to charge, right? That infrastructure is not mature yet. So compare the glut of EVs that we have today and the lack of charging infrastructure. People tend to get frustrated. So why did I purchase an EV? Now, I think the next phase of it is those infrastructure issues will get sorted out. You will have more chargers, whether it's Electrify America, whether it's ChargePoint, you will have more charging infrastructure. The next issue will become, how do you make that infrastructure more reliable at scale? Because you, instead of having 3 or 4 chargers at a mall, I'm talking about Electrify America, you will have maybe 12, 14 charges. Now, how do you make that reliable so that more than 80% of those charges really work? So that is an infrastructure challenge that some of these vendors will need to address. Now, once that the infrastructure is there, the EVs are there, when you're merrily charging your EV, but I forgot one thing, even before you get to that infrastructure stage, right? People have home chargers or home EV chargers, level 2 chargers, if you will. And a lot of people are plugging in during certain peak demand times. So yes, I think there are situations where the grid capacity is not enough to meet demand. And states like California, I think it's offset by solar and battery and all that good stuff. But in other states, I think there is a deficit in capacity. Now, thank God, I think those states may not have as many number of EVs as California, but I think it is imminent. You see that you're being charged like twice the rate, right? For other like high loads or high appliances like HVAC for that matter. The third infrastructure problem you'll have, Ryan, outside of all of this is, okay, you'll have EVs, I mean, you'll have batteries, you'll have vehicles actually charging homes and vehicles releasing energy back to the grid at some point when infrastructure becomes mature. That issue is, how do you model that particular capacity? You have, let's say, 100 EVs in a specific neighborhood of X number of homes, and that those X number of homes have not been built yet. But you would ask the consumer, how many number of EVs would you have? You would supply the data to a utility, but they need to model what kind of transformers they would need to have, what kind of network cabling they would need to have, what kind of capacitor bank controls, what kind of arresters, I mean, what would the substation infrastructure look like? How much generation capacity would they need? All this, in the lack of such modeling tools, it will be a disaster for utilities, to be honest with you. And that is the problem that you're alluding to. But the problem is already here. That moment is now, where I think people will need to rely on companies like Eaton, where I think we provide the modeling tools to understand what your grid capacity or lack thereof may be when you add a lot of electric vehicles, a lot of distributed energy resources onto the grid coming on at the same time. So, short answer, the situation's already here.
I was afraid you were going to say that. You know, Eaton has been in the power electronics game a very long time. You guys know a thing or two about this. Give us a look ahead. I mean, when you look at power electronics, innovation comes slow. This is not a high innovation space. It seems to me by design. That's my take. I don't know if you agree, but this is a tried and true technology space. People don't want transformers that are highly innovative. They want transformers that are highly reliable, So this question, I guess, is through the lens of a company that takes innovation seriously, but also is not in the business of moving quickly by design, what's next for you guys? What are we going to see out of Eaton as this story plays forward?
Ryan, I think it's a good observation, but my view and my take is that Eaton, as of now, I think is moving fast. There are certain technologies as it relates to energy transition. By the way, I call it the energy revolution, like we used to call the industrial revolution. This is the energy revolution of today, right? It's referred to as energy transition, but I call it the energy revolution. But we are a traditional power distribution equipment, power protection equipment company, power management company. But we have a huge installed base of customers. We understand this domain really well. We understand electrical signals and electrical equipment and the data that comes out from these equipment really, really well. Using that specific data, I think we can clearly understand what the energy flows are. How do we model those energy flows? So the question you asked is, so what's next for Eaton? We talk about EV charging. We talk about vehicle to home. We talk about vehicle to grid. We talk about vehicle to load. We talk about microgrids. So we have access to such a huge opportunity here, and we are slowly capitalizing on that. So we are making some strides there when it comes to these technologies. And when it comes to commercial and residential buildings, energy modeling tools, energy management software, energy management solutions, if you will, that is, I think, where we are taking the leap. We don't want to be a product company anymore. Neither do we want to be just a services company. We want to be a solutions company with digital at the forefront. So with digital being a key component of such solution value we add to the customer. So net energy revolution or energy transition, we are significant players when it relates to electrification. So we enable the electrification journey of every industrial consumer on the planet. So we touch the lives of these industrial consumers, whether they are in utilities, industrial process, data centers, residential buildings, commercial buildings, aerospace, etc. So we want to play a big part when it comes to electrification of aerospace vehicles, airplanes as an example, eVTOLs. We talk about eVTOLs. So a lot is ahead for us, and we are not keeping quiet. We're moving forward, right? And we're moving fast.
I love it. Well, let's talk about other companies that are moving fast. So you've been in this space for a while. Know a thing or two about IoT. Who's doing good work out here that you think not enough people are talking about?
Oh, Ryan, I think I have a bunch of companies to talk to you about, and this will probably take the whole day. But since you asked a very specific question, I'll categorize it into big companies and small companies. Some of the bigger companies that have impressed me that are doing IoT and IoT as it relates to AI and digital, I think Microsoft is breaking some good ground there. To Amazon Web Services, it is doing some groundbreaking stuff there internally for their warehouses, factories. We all know that. I think now with generative AI coming in, I think they're devising new ways of reaching end users and end customers. The company that's impressed me the most in that space, right, at scale is Tesla. And their software capabilities and the work that they're actually doing at the intersection of IoT and AI is mind-boggling. They're like generations ahead in terms of that infrastructure being used for Neuralink and SpaceX as well. So in terms of those data collection mechanisms, those huge databases, that huge infrastructure when it comes to solutions is being used of their sister companies or brother companies, if you will. So those are the bigger companies, Ryan. Smaller companies, I mean, there's a wide plethora of them available out there. I won't talk about all of that. The one company that's impressed me the most, the one field that's kind of like really close to my heart is smart farming and smart irrigation. And we talk about a lot of chemicals in the soil. We talk about a lot of pesticides in the soil and polluting the soil with so many chemicals, right? And that has downstream impacts on sustainability or lack thereof. There's this company called AIGen, A-I-G-E-N, based out of Kirkland, Washington. They're doing some groundbreaking work. They have something called Element, which is basically a robot, like a four-wheel robot that actually goes in without any chemicals. It senses what weeds, what botanical hazards there are in the field, in the farm, and weeds them out. It goes at like 2 miles an hour. It understands both living and non-living organisms out there that may be harmful chemical-wise and weeds them out without the use of pesticides. And it does that at scale. for these farms. And I've seen that in operation at Bakersfield. I've seen that in operation near San Diego, some of the Anza Borrego Desert in San Diego. Pretty groundbreaking stuff.
AI Gen, you heard it here first. Arvind, that's it for today. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much, Ryan. Thanks for the opportunity to host me. Really appreciate it.
And thank you for listening. Join us next time as we meet with another executive and talk about things that went wrong on a journey that went right. Over the Air is brought to you by Very. To find out more about us, head over to verypossible.com and make sure to search for Over the Air in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere else great podcasts are found. Don't forget to click subscribe to ensure you don't miss any future episodes. On behalf of the team here at Very, thanks for listening.